You're listening to Ruining It for Everyone with your hosts Maggie McPhee and Christopher Harrington. Tonight's episode, Apple and I are seeing other people. This episode is sponsored by Maxon, makers of the outstanding Cinema 4D. Download a free demo version of Cinema 4D R15 at maxon.net. So much to cover.
What is up?
Yeah. We've been sort of bitching a lot recently. One of the things that's been, you know, kind of getting at our craw, and it's been the side subjects to a lot of our episodes, actually, which is, you know, Apple being so very large and, you know, trying to do a lot of things at once and you know, not really doing all of them very well. And you know, where does that leave us as far as our needs are concerned? And where do we go? You know, because quite frankly, the newer operating systems, Mavericks and iOS 7, kind of, I mean, they have a lot of benefits, but they're also pretty broken at the same time. So it's really difficult to say, yes, you should definitely, you know, upgrade to this because it is demonstrably better in every conceivable way than the thing that came before it. And we're no longer able to say that.
Yeah, there's also a lot of you have to update now to do this and that. So that's kind of getting to people. There's also this undercurrent of people kind of, it's a weird kind of grumble in a way, I want to say it. I mean, that Apple might be doing what people are asking them to do, which, you know, sounds kind of crazy, but for a company whose history has been about figuring out what you don't want yet, but you're going to want soon, I had, you know, we've all kind of learned the benefit of that. And now there seems to be areas where they're like going, oh, well, people want this, so we should do this.
That I think that may be true. I still wonder about how they're going about doing these things. I also think that there's a lot of bullshit going on with regard to analysts and what they think. And, they're always like, Apple has to bring out a watch within 30 days. Otherwise, they're going to lose the market and blah, 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 blah. That is a bunch of shit.
I know. I saw there's a story the other day about how, which one was it, Motorola, whoever started the whole, why they started the whole, you know, on your wrist revolution. It's like, well, they started it because there was a rumor saying that Apple was going to do it and they tried to do it first.
Yeah. You can actually think that the entire, what I would call robust wearable environment ecosystem is entirely made up by analysts.
Right. It's built on a rumor.
Yeah. Which is hilarious. So basically what happened was someone decided that they were going to say, oh, well, what's next? We've got phones, we've got, you know, pads, we've got computers. What's next? Oh, we're going to have a watch. That's what they're going to do. They're totally going to make a watch. And, you know, Apple's always denied this. Always. They've always said that something is, you know, something else is on the horizon, certainly, but never specifically a watch. And the second that question came up of, oh, Apple didn't say no, they weren't making a watch, therefore they are most definitely making a watch, Samsung and Motorola and HTC and all those guys went bonkers.
And now Apple just gets to sit back and watch them try to figure out how to build a submarine. Yeah. And then later they'll make a better submarine.
Exactly. It's a beautiful thing. It's a wonderful thing. Because you know damn well that if Apple decides to bring a wearable out, it's not going to be the first one you've seen. It's going to be just a lot better.
Right.
Whatever it is, it's going to be better. And, yeah, it's just so funny to me that this entire thing was realized by some rumor.
Well, I guess we should probably step back and say, well, it's going to be better, I guess, considering we're bitching about them screwing shit up. But
well, don't get me wrong. I mean, it's definitely going to be better. It's still not necessarily going to be my market, but it's going to be better than what's out there.
Agreed.
But I think that is, you know, bringing to home the point, which is I don't know how much I am in Apple's market anymore.
Yeah.
You know, the things that I'm looking at the things I use every day, right? I use mapping software pretty much every day. I
get lost a lot.
Well, I get lost a lot, yeah. You know, I look at file transfer every day. You know, I'm always, you know, beaming something up to some cloud service so I can have it at work versus home versus wherever I am, right? And I message people a lot. And those are three major areas. Basically, that comprises, I would say, 90% of like my utility need for a computer.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the three major areas that Apple sucks at. I mean, sucks. They're not, it's not that they're like not as necessarily as good as some of the competition. Some of the competition may be more specific or whatever. No, they're bad. They are bad at doing these things. Apple Maps still sucks. It sucks less than it did.
I mean, I find myself using it more. I mean, you know, we both know that originally when the big change came, it was like, okay, can't use this,
Right, turn it off, and it gets put into the directory of misfit toys.
right?
Everyone has an Apple Croft folder
yep.
on their iPhone.
It's like, stocks?
Yeah.
There you go.
Nope. Because even if I cared about stocks on a day-to-day basis,
I'm not going to use that app.
The Apple Stocks app is woefully underinteresting for anyone who actually needs to have that.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, my integration with Google Now has better stock stuff built into it.
Mm.
Which is hilarious. But yeah, you take a look at iCloud storage. iCloud storage is pretty awful, mostly because it only is tied to my iTunes account, right? So yeah. If I'm at the office, I am sure as hell not logging in to my personal iTunes account on a work computer.
Sure.
You know, A, because who the fuck knows what's going to go down if I do that? You know, here I am entering my information onto a system that, you know, could very well be key sniffing. I mean, I don't think it is, but it may be.
Right. It may also be illegal for you to do it.
Exactly.
If it starts downloading music onto a machine, which is not your machine, is owned by a corporation, and suddenly, you know, if it's on a file server, then it's been transferred. You know, there's all these things that it might very well be illegal.
Exactly. Whereas something like Dropbox or Google Drive, you know, you've got more control over that because it's really just a folder on your drive that you fully control.
Yeah, or even you can just access it via a website. Can't
right.
do that with iTunes.
You can-ish. There is the iCloud.com website. But yeah, it doesn't work the way you think it would work. Because if it worked like Dropbox works, where you can just download any file just randomly. Then...
Oh, I mean about like iTunes and stuff.
Oh, right.
Yeah, iCloud, that's there, but no one would use that for that, right?
No, I can't imagine. Well, and also there's no hierarchy, right? It's all just a pile of stuff. So that's not at all good. I mean, I've got, 100-odd gigabytes of stuff in my Dropbox?
Right.
You know, that's just not good. Not to mention, I work in a heterogeneous environment. You know, I have Macs at home, I have Macs at work, but I also have PCs at work. I have Android devices, I have iOS devices. I need my files everywhere. And Apple locks me in to the Apple ecosystem, which obviously is their right to do, but
right.
It's not what I want. And it's even more insidious because the lock-in isn't just that side of things where, oh, well, you know, if you're an Apple user, then you get to use iCloud and you get to use iMessage. But they don't even have that option for other devices. You don't have the opportunity to share that with other people unless they are also in that ecosystem.
Right. I mean, there's the PC client, but I mean, that really just almost doesn't even count.
The which client?
there's a Windows client, isn't there now?
Oh, I didn't realize. Oh, PC client. I don't know. I didn't realize that. That's entirely possible.
Well, I could be wrong. I thought there was.
Right, but I'm certainly not going to see an iMessage compatible.
Well, no. Yeah, no.
It's system just like, on Android, for example.
Yeah. Although that's actually what brought me to the whole, is Apple trying to appease people? There's a huge rumor going around now that they are going to release iTunes for Android.
Really?
Yes.
You heard it here first, folks. Okay, maybe not.
It's a weird rumor, but it kind of just suddenly got a lot of traction. I mean, it could just be out of the blue someone, and you know, and it got pushed, but I don't know.
Well, I mean, they made iTunes for PCs, and the reason they did that was so that they could basically own the digital music space. Right. And they could also own, you know, first it was owning the digital music space because they brought iTunes to the PC so that PC users could buy iPods.
Right. Exactly.
And yeah. I could certainly see them wanting to retain their, well, it depends on how well Google Play is doing. I don't know how well they are.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a bit of traction that definitely for the Google and for, you know, Amazon Music. So, that, I mean, that could be, you know, one of the driving factors. But it's also weird for Apple to say, okay, well, if you want this, you know.
Yeah, it's like, it's sort of the bad genie concept. Hey, you wish for this, we're giving it to you.
Yeah, Sinbad.
Right. I can totally see that. And it's like, nope, my job is to interpret your wish in the most devious, horrific way possible. And I will do so with aplomb. Oh, so funny anecdote, right? Around here, Apple Maps is pretty abysmal. It gets landmarks wrong all the time. And I've attempted to correct them. And of course, in true Apple fashion, the corrections basically go into a giant black hole. I've never seen them corrected. They're not corrected on my personal devices, which would actually be a nice solution. You know, push them out to my devices if they're not going to be, you know, accepted upstream. That's fine.
Sure.
But I noticed two things wrong with Google Maps, and within a week, they were corrected.
Yep. I've done the same.
Amazing. You know, the responsiveness of the Google folk. I mean, granted, they want to have all of your data. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's just what it is. And that's fine. You know, of course, not only do they want all of your data, they want it to be correct.
Yeah, that is exactly what I was going to say. Yeah. I mean, there's a different kind of idea. They are data gatherers.
Right. So
yeah, whereas Apple's like, well, we're going to get it working.
Yeah, and certainly has improved. It is not yet up to the level of Google Maps 3 years ago.
Agreed.
Yeah, it's just not good. And of course, iMessage is still a giant fuck up.
What's that? iMessage, what's that?
Exactly. Well, you know, it's shameful that I am trying to message more via Hangouts. And the Hangouts application, which recently got revised, by the way, on iOS, and it's way better than what it was.
That's good.
Shouts out to the fellow. He started following me. I think he started following me on Twitter, and unfortunately, I've forgotten his name. Had I been prepared to go on to this little segue, I would have put his name into the show notes, but I will try to hunt it down. So working with Hangouts is actually far easier than dealing with iMessage. It always gets the messages in order. Apparently, it's not a difficult task because every other messaging service seems to get this right.
I still haven't figured out when iMessage is going to start sending SMSs to my computer versus my phone. And it confuses the living hell out of me when I have more than one computer running.
Oh, entirely. I can do you one better, actually. I shut off the automatically send as SMS, and it will send as SMS anyway. Yeah, good times. Now, granted, I haven't tried that since the 7.1 upgrade, but in 7.0.x, It certainly did that. And yeah, I just noticed that suddenly what started off as blue was now green. And
no,
for those not in the iOS universe, if the message is blue, then it is within the iMessage system. If it's green, that means it's been sent as an SMS. Weirder still, Apple will send it via email if the recipient is not SMS capable. But it comes through an SMS gateway. No, how crazy is that?
Yeah. Yeah, I was like messaging, you know, I was SMSing or text messaging or whatever with someone the other day, and you know, and it was going back and forth, and I put my phone down, and my computer was on, but the screen was locked. Now my laptop, and I opened my laptop, typed in, and then the next thing I noticed, I got an iMessage popped up, you know, from her, you know, that was a initially a text, you know, she's on the iPhone and whatnot.
Oh, right. Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, I'm like, why did it suddenly decide to do it now? How did it know? you know, but then, you know, of course, the next one pops up on my phone and it's just like no rhyme or reason why it did it.
And my personal favorite is people I know with iPhones, when you go to message them and it doesn't come up as a valid iMessage thing, which is also confounding because there's no way to force it to happen. It just decides. I'm like, you know, maybe not deciding. Maybe I know they have an iPhone. Maybe they're right next to me. Maybe I can figure out whether or not. Of course, if they're right next to me, should they even text them?
Is it people that are in your address book?
No, they're not people in my address book.
Oh, okay. Right.
As a matter of fact, I don't think I have. I mean, more than half the people I message are not in my address book. But yeah, no, it's really annoying. And then, you know, a couple of weeks back, we had CarPlay announced.
Honk, honk.
Yeah. What a giant pile of shit that looks like. I mean,
oh, I was wondering what your opinion is. Boy,
yeah.
Boy, do I know now.
I mean, it's so horrible. It's Motorola Rocker horrible. I mean,
wow.
It's dreadful. Well, I mean, granted, to Apple's credit, they are not dealing with the hardware. It's actually exactly like the Motorola Rocker fiasco, which is, you know, Apple has nothing to do with the hardware, and so therefore they have no control over what can happen. I mean, we're talking about car manufacturers. So the CarPlay thing is ostensibly iOS in your car. You know, you've got your Navi with your screen on it, and you can, you know, use apps via the navigation system, and it links up to your to the iPhone, and you know, theoretically life is great. So you could use Apple's Maps, you could use, you know, Pandora or any one of the other music systems, etc. It's a lovely idea, except the execution is dreadful. I mean, for example, you know, you've got, which I thought was hilarious, there's a video out there that is showcasing CarPlay in a lot of scenarios, one of which is a very, very new, really expensive Ferrari. And the Navi system is a resistive touchscreen.
I don't know what it is, but why are Ferrari's sat nav so bad?
If I'm spending $230,000 for a Ferrari, you best be giving me the best navigation system ever.
Right. When the sat nav in the Ferrari is worse than the one in the Honda.
Yes. Although I have to say, the Navi in my TSX is pretty damn amazing for a car-based Navi. So it's a damning with faint praise or praising with faint damnation. I don't know. But yeah, and that's the weird thing is that my Navi is a touchscreen, is a proper, it's a resistive touchscreen,
right.
But it's a proper touchscreen. And it's very simple. It's large enough that I don't have to hunt for things. They really figured out that the buttons should be very large. And so I'm not, you know, fiddling with a knob trying to figure out which corner I need to press or how many jogs of the knob I need to go through before I, you know, press down and get to where I want to go. I just touch the thing that I want. And it works. It works really well. It also is nice because it doesn't try to absorb the rest of the functions of the car. So basically, it's just radio and satellite navigation. That's it. Makes things way easier. You know, because I've seen a lot of cars that try to incorporate everything, including the windows rolling up and down, you know? And it's like, maybe not. I shouldn't need to dive 50 different screens in order just to, like, receive my McDonald's takeaway.
Right. Those are also generally the cars you get in and you can't figure out how to turn it on.
Right. Yeah. Dreadful. But, The Audi MMI Plus is also not bad. I actually really love the high-res screen. I wouldn't say it's retina, but it's pretty high-res. But it does use the whole knobby thing, and it goes one step further where they've got these sort of directional buttons. So you've got the spinny knob, you know, so you spin and then you press down, and that's like the enter key. But then for whatever screen you're in, there is a northwest, northeast, southeast, southwest button. And there are labels on those corners in the nav. And so you press one of those buttons to correspond to the thing on the screen. I'd rather just touch the screen.
Yeah, pretty much.
It's a little weird. I actually think that with the knobby things and the non-touchscreen variants, it really requires you to look at the screen more than my touchscreen.
Yeah.
Because you can kind of do that mental, like, okay, I still have a mental image of what that, you know, of what the screen looks like. So I'm just going to, like, mash my finger onto that general area, and I'm probably going to hit it.
Right. And also some of them, and I can't remember which ones I've seen, you know, it's so funny me hear me talking about cars when I don't drive. I've seen some of those, you know, those sat navs. And mm-hmm. I think these are probably some of those Beckers that Ferrari and Mercedes use. You know, they'll have that dial. And the reason you have to look at it is because there'll be the dial and there'll be some other stuff, and you can't screw it up. You got to get it right, you know. You have to either grab the dial right, you know, and it may be one of those dials that pushes in. You know, there's all this crazy to trying to do too much.
Sure. Well, BMW's, yeah. I think, their version is, not only is their puck spinnable, but it is also an 8-way D-pad. Or at least it used to be at one point in time. I don't know if that's still the case.
Their puck, though, it's down in the
center console.
Yeah.
As is the MMI. It's the Audi MMI.
I think that's better. If you're going to have a puck, or if you're going to have a
thing. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But the ones that are up on the dash, it's like,
oh, that's, you know, insane.
It's insane.
That's total insanity. Because also, you know, trying to, you know, bring your wrist into a 90-degree position like that, that has got to be some pain. or perhaps just me. But,
well, I mean, at least, at most, it's uncomfortable. But, I mean, you know, it's also one of the reasons why you kind of have to look. You know, you can't just reach down and kind of fiddle for the thing.
Right. And the one on Lexus, I think, actually has what is ostensibly a mouse. Yeah. I mean, it's controlled by a joystick.
Really?
No. But it has a cursor.
I'm sure that works just as good as I'm imagining it does.
Holy crap. It's this weird sort of, it's not a trackball. It's not a puck like BMW or Audi. It's shaped vaguely like a mouse, except the mouse top is sort of attached to the ball. So it kind of pivots like a ball head tripod, like on a tripod.
Wow.
It's very, very weird.
That sounds terrible.
Yes.
and it pushes a mouse cursor.
Yeah. Yeah.
That shit never has ever worked on anything.
No.
Because you have to turn down the velocity so much.
And exactly.
So it's just like excruciating.
Click. Fitz's law for a reason.
Click. Right.
Yeah. The time at which it takes to hit a target is a function of the size of the target and how far away it is from you. And if you have to deal with a mouse, that sucks.
Yeah.
While driving, no less. I mean, maybe if it were like a passenger only thing, that would be really cool. But no.
Sure.
So back to CarPlay. Yeah, it is a Motorola rocker situation. They are merely airplaying the UI. Like, they're basically airplaying a reduced functionality UI onto the quote native hardware of the car. And yeah, you can tell how good that's going to be, which is to say, not good at all.
Well, now I haven't looked in as deep as you have. So are they doing all this via Bluetooth?
No, actually, at the moment, it's all wired, and it's only for Lightning connectors. Yeah.
Really?
Yep. Yep. So it assumes that in the center console, you've got some sort of Lightning connector USB port, and that is where it is looking for the...
So it's basically solved no problem.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's nice to have your maps up there. I get that. That's fine. But if that's the case, then I might as well just mount my iPhone right in front of me, like every cab driver in the city does.
Right. I mean, if you don't want to have a horrible suction cup thingy on your window, that's a different story. But to me, it doesn't solve anything because, you know, you've got maps already in the car, and the more modern versions actually use the real Google Maps. You know, they can either use their own cellular radio. For example, Audi cars have a SIM slot.
Right.
Which is crazy to me, but it is what it is. But some cars will actually tether to your phone. So you don't need yet another data plan for yet another device. It's just weird to me because, like, when you think of devices, you think of things that you hold in your hand, not things you sit in.
So if it were me, the only thing I would probably use from this would be to play music.
Yeah, and even then, you know, you could do that ages and ages
already,
ago.
Yeah. I mean, all right, I probably have a bigger screen to look for stuff, but that's about it.
Maybe, but
I'm probably going to use my built-in sat nav.
Yeah. Well, and also even the other weird thing is that Apple's aesthetic, The iOS aesthetic with the crazy super ellipse or hyper ellipse, whatever they want to call it, rounded soft edges and pastel neon horrible unfortunate color situations. They decided that because it's effectively AirPlay in a car, that is what you see. You know, so it's totally not the scheme of the car that you're driving. Yeah, Audi has a particular... Well, all cars have very particular interior aesthetics, and Apple matches none of them.
Well, I can kind of imagine why. I mean, you know, because they're going to release this thing for... I mean, there's, what, 5 makers that are doing it now, but they have a whole list of a gazillion that they're going to do it with, so...
Yeah, I think it's just going to be one of those things where, yeah, they're going to do it, but no one's going to use it. You know, because if you're going to, because you have to shell out the $1 jillion for the Navi package on your car anyway. So of those people who shell out that money, because those packages are usually like $4,000, $5,000 or whatever, you know, they're not particularly cheap. Yeah, you know, how many of those are also going to then basically route around the Navi package and plug in their iPhone into it? I mean, I'm sure there's going to be a few, but I also think that with the competition of Android devices, of iPads and Android tablets being put in cars, that the people who make these sat-navs and car interfaces are going to step up the game, and they will have Pandora, and they will have all that stuff already available. I think BMW has a BMW apps thing where, yeah, you can basically download these additional apps.
And I think Ford's been doing that too.
Sure.
If I'm not mistaken.
I know they were doing stuff with Microsoft's Sync, but I think they stopped doing that. So I don't know where they are in relation to sort of the state of the art.
Yeah, but I know, yeah, like you say, there are manufacturers who have been adding stuff like that, because I know I've heard people talk about, you know, playing Pandora in their car and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that stuff, that's great. I mean, what gets me though is just I mean, there's not even like a cradle or something. It's just literally you plug in a lightning cable.
Well, there may be a cradle inside the center console, but in all the demos I've seen, it's all been, you know, yeah, we just shove your phone into the center console and plug it in.
Yeah, they're showing a cable. I haven't really seen, you know, any of that. So they're showing a cable on the site. So that's just bizarre to me.
Yeah, it's like, it's a little weird.
I mean, because that's really the thing is like if people want to use, and I'm sure there are some people who will jump all over this. People mm-hmm. who are, you know, always on their phone, who rely on Siri for things and whatnot, you know. So your average Hollywood big cigar hotshot executive will probably love this. But I mean, the whole idea is that, well, I can already, a lot of cars, I can already plug my phone in and do some stuff. So make this great. And this just doesn't sound great to me. It just sounds adequate.
Yeah, it really does not solve a problem that I can perceive. There are problems that it is attempting to solve, but I don't think they solve them.
Right. When one problem being that, you know, Apple Maps is not the best in the world. So
well, is that too?
If it was, then we'd be all like, yeah, but you get Apple Maps on your Navi. You know,
it's like, mm.
your Navi's probably already pretty good.
Well, and that brings me to the other thing is that it's not all apps that just suddenly appear on your car screen. It's only the ones that Apple has blessed.
Right.
So if you're not, you know, the one, then you're shit out of luck. You know, I may make, you know, an amazing tool that will, maybe it'll tap into the phone's accelerometer and all that, and it can give you, you know, 0-60 times, it can give you all sorts of fun telemetry and blah, blah, blah. But if Apple doesn't like it, then it's not going to work at all.
Right. If you look at that screen, you see the music app, which is Apple's, you know, music app. You don't see Pandora. I mean, you could probably actually play Pandora through it, but it's not going to use the interface. It's just going to put audio out, and then you've got to pick up your phone to do it.
Exactly. And here's the great thing. Just using a line-out cable, I can pump whatever audio I want into my sound system in my car. Right. And manipulating the iPhone isn't so difficult while I'm stopped or whatever, and chances are fairly good. I mean, granted, I have a very particular use case. I listen to podcasts on my iPhone. I have no music on my iPhone. Not entirely true, but basically I only listen to podcasts on my iPhone. And those are long form. So I'm not, oh, I don't like this song, change this song. You know, I keep it on until I get out of the car.
Right.
So it's very weird. The software thing that Apple's doing, I don't think Jony Ive is very good at being the head of interface design.
Oh, and now it does say CarPlay will also support additional audio apps that you've downloaded to your phone, but it doesn't say that you'll be able to use them on the interface, only that you'll be able to, they'll be supported.
Right. Well, they have, in a press release, they've stated
podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Beats Music, and Stitcher are supported.
Right. Basically, companies that gave Apple a fuck ton of cash get to be on the interface. Good times.
Yep. So Spotify beat Pandora out, and there you go.
Yep. Exactly. So it's just, again, this is lack of choice.
Yeah, I mean, and I've seen some hideous-looking Android interfaces, but the fact that they completely mimic whatever device it's using, I mean,
is nice.
It may be hideous-looking, but at least it doesn't, you know, well, it doesn't do what I was saying earlier. It doesn't give you what you want. I mean, it does give you what you want. I guess this is a case where Apple's not giving you necessarily what you want, but they're not giving you much at all.
Yeah, it just this whole idea seems poorly thought out and certainly poorly executed.
Because I totally think this is inevitable. I always thought it was inevitable, but
sure,
this seems like you said this is more like a Motorola rocker step than it is a, you know, iPod
right.
step.
And did I explain the rocker thing?
I don't know. Do you think a lot of people don't? Maybe they don't. Actually.
Well, it was a really long time ago because
it was.
Apple, you know, that only, you know, Apple only became popular after the iPhone, really. So
iPod.
Well, the iPod. Yeah, I suppose. Yeah, so Steve Jobs comes out with his Motorola phone, and it's basically the iTunes phone. This is prior to the iPhone coming out. And the idea was that this phone could be hooked up to iTunes, and you can get all your music on it, and you can play it back and forth, and you could get, it had a fairly large screen on it, so you get album artwork and you can scroll through and get your playlists and all that sort of thing. And of course, the demo gods being what they were, the demo broke down. And in true Steve Jobs fashion, he got intensely fed up. And while he was walking off, I believe, and this wasn't on camera, but the story goes that he basically threw the thing across the room.
I could totally see it.
Yeah.
But I mean, well, still, yeah. But still, originally iTunes was just a thing, and then these iPods come along, and, you know. But
suddenly, now you've got all your music in your pocket. 5,000 songs in your pocket.
But the thing about this was, it was terrible. I mean, it wasn't very good at what it did. It was kind of confusing. You could hold a certain number of songs.
Yes, a very small number of songs, mind you.
Yeah, it was a 512 meg, I think, up to a gigabyte or something, you know. It was like, you could only have 100 songs.
Right.
Didn't matter how big, how long, you could have 100 songs because it would, you know, recompress them for the phone. So it was just terrible.
Well, and it's entirely possible that, you know, whoever programmed it, you know, just decided, you know, hey, there's a counter. 0 to 99. Done. Overflow.
Yeah. But the point here with this being that it was, you know, Apple relied on someone else to make something happen.
Right. And that never, ever ends well for Apple.
Yeah.
You know, they always regret it. They always like, this is crap. Although you could say that this is the thing they do before they say, remember that horrible, horrible thing that happened?
Well, we fixed it all.
Exactly. We fixed it, and now we're fucking geniuses again. They could be pulling that. I'm not entirely certain. I don't think they've got the balls to do that.
I don't think that, yeah. This is too... I think this is a really important thing, too, because here's the thing that I think about our phones these days.
Mm.
Currently, we think of them as phones.
That's interesting, because I don't think of my phone as a phone, because I don't use it as a phone.
You're an edge case. I think I'm an edge case. I do everything I can to avoid phone calls, unless it's absolutely necessary.
Oh, sure.
Or unless it's, you know, social or what, or what, or someone that I need to talk to for a particular reason. But otherwise, please don't call me, you know. But, you know, the majority of people think of them as phones, and they are smartphones now. But I think the phone part becomes less and less and less important in a very short amount of time. And this sort of integration with vehicles, your home, the so-called Internet of Everything, all of that has become not just commonplace, but important. Because I think people will begin to tie those things together in a cohesive way so that on the other end of that, the thing that pops out is what used to be the smartphone. It's the device that connects everything for us. And now I'm not going to make any stupid predictions about, you know, that it's attached to a jetpack and you wear it on your head, because you always get that wrong because humans can't be predicted.
We're totally getting jetpacks in the future. We called it here, folks. Jetpacks in the future. Done.
Jetpack, iPod in your helmet. I mean, iPhone in your helmet, but it won't be called an iPhone. So, I mean, you know, I really think that that's becoming, I think that's where we're headed. So this sort of things like these car, you know, in vehicle integration is really going to be important. It may be the next really important thing. As far as vehicles go, you know.
But I think a better way to do it would be to say have the equivalent of some sort of open protocol alliance.
Dead set, perfectly, absolutely right. I agree with you 100%.
Yeah, where you've got, you know, the equivalent of, oh, okay, the proximity of the phone to the car is close, so therefore I'm going to route all of the audio or some of the audio or some of the messaging or what have you, you know, from the phone to the car, but have the car interface be the car interface, have the phone interface be the phone interface, but have them speak the same language so that they can communicate with each other.
Sure.
I mean, all of networking all over was founded on that principle. You know,
or not even that. I mean, or even if you want to go to the opposite extreme, okay, fine. Give me the entire Apple experience versus, you know, don't, the in-between is a real problem. Don't cobble together half and half.
Right.
You know, either let the car be the thing and it derives its data from the phone and other things, you know, or let the phone completely take over and give me all of my apps and everything, and then some of them will be specialized for mobile. But bodging together the two, just I don't think it's supportable.
Right? No, it's certainly not. The current situation of CarPlay is certainly not the end game. It can't possibly be the end game because it's really lame. Right. Mm-hmm. The only way they can possibly do it right is, again, with this open protocol initiative, or which doesn't currently exist as far as I understand. I mean, it may be in the back room somewhere, but it's certainly not an open standard at the moment. Or car manufacturers just say, hey, Apple, we want you to actually make the entire device.
Right, which is what I totally thought was going to happen. I thought that it was going to be, here is a thing built by Apple that's only for cars, but we've built it and it's very much like our other devices and uses some of the same apps and whatnot. But we built it, goes in the car, fits, you know, standard whatever.
It's got that Apple sensibility. And they can make it for different cars. You know, they can say, it's like, okay, well, here's all the hardware. You can make it a different screen. You know, you can't make it necessarily a different resolution, but you can make it a different physical size. But
right, you can have a,
they all have the same
controls,
etc. You can
have one that's 8 inch, or you can have one that's 9 inches, and but basically it just fits in this thing. It's a touch screen. You don't need any knobs or buttons or bullshit.
Right.
And it interfaces with whatever.
And it has Siri in it, and it's got whatever. And the great part about it is that it doesn't need to be constrained by our mobile device power envelope.
But when you're in the car, if you can ask Siri to call somebody and it's Bluetooth connects to your phone, you know, bah, hello.
Yeah. Imagine how much better a system like that could be if it weren't constrained by needing to sip power, you know, needing to have a 12-hour battery or what have you.
Right. Right, exactly. And it's like your phone goes to sleep when you're not using it. You know, whatever. Yeah. I don't know. I haven't really looked at some of these other systems, but I swear I thought someone was doing some things with the – I have to look into it. There was one I saw that interfaced with Android phones that I didn't really follow up on, but it looked interesting, you know. Just – I don't know. I really do think, though, that this is very, very important, or will be very, very soon.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, obviously, Android has also have a car thing happening in the works as well. I think Audi is actually on the Android side of things, which is interesting. But again, it's a situation where I don't want to have my $30,000 vehicle or $230,000 vehicle locked into an ecosystem that, you know,
right,
is dependent on whatever phone I happen to have.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you get this thing that I'm looking at on the Apple site, and presumably there's some lock in there. And, well, I mean, of course there is. I mean, it probably has, I don't know, does this thing have its own sat nav or not? Or is it just a thing, you know? I guess I
right.
don't know
is it,
that.
Is it an empty shell or not? I mean, in the case of the CarPlay devices, yes. The CarPlay devices are fully functioning navies / whatever they were. They just also happen to have this CarPlay functionality. So
yeah,
if you never plug in,
okay,
right,
I guess.
It's fine, but again, then you have this weird hybrid experience. Oh, am I in CarPlay mode and I'm seeing everything in sort of the Apple UI, or am I backed out of that and I'm in the native cars UI and I can do different things?
Yeah.
awful.
And then, yeah, then you go to sell the car. Oh, no, sorry, I have an Android phone, so I'm not really interested in this.
Yeah. Actually, it's sort of funny. Part of the buying decision back in the early to mid-2000s was, does the car have Sirius or does the car have XM?
Yeah.
The irony is that now Sirius and XM are one company.
Right.
You still, like, if you were an XM subscriber and then you buy a new car, like a new car today that is Sirius XM, there are still channels that you only get on one head unit versus the other.
Ah, that's crazy.
Which is insane. I'm finding that to be true. I did some research, and as it turns out, there are a few channels that I get that I can't get when I get the new car.
Unlike, you know, you see like a lot of these receivers that will have an input for one type of net radio or another. But yeah, I mean, I can't imagine.
Yeah, it's totally ridiculous. I mean, the merger happened, 5 years ago or something ridiculous?
Yeah.
And they still haven't sorted out their channel lineup? That is insane. It's, ugh. But, so this episode is dedicated to bitching about a lot of shit. Oh, dear. But I also wanted to talk about some of the hardware stuff. I mean, you take a look at the new Mac Pro, and again, super capable machine. It's a very fast machine. Don't get me wrong. Do not email us telling us that, oh, yes, it's actually really, really fast. Yes, it is. But it's also not the machine that we asked for, and you're still in a weird situation in a year or so when you want to upgrade. You know, you could also buy the equivalent HP Z series and have much more expansion possibilities. And the reality is that, you know, a lot of the cross-platform stuff, apps, you know, they run faster on Windows.
Well, you know, it depends on what you do. Like I say, I mean, I've said a bunch of times, if I were a grader, I would love the new Mac Pro. But if I'm an illustrator and I'm using, you know, Illustrator and Photoshop
right.
and Manga Studio, I can choose whatever I want.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
And of course, you know, I'm not going to need super duper power for that. So, but if I'm a poor starving artist, I'm obviously not going to buy a new Mac Pro because they're very expensive. But
right. Well, right. And so you'll buy maybe you've got enough to buy a 4-core or maybe even a 6-core i7. You know, which doesn't even exist in the Mac universe.
Right.
But you can get it, you know, and they've got a crap ton of cash. And, you know, sure, they're not the Xeon processors, but the current Xeon generation is actually last generation's desktop. So, I mean, from the family, I'm not trying
right,
to
right.
imply.
Not literally.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, but if you're like if you're a 3D modeler or you're a CAD person or whatever, or especially, you know, if you're, you know, a 3D modeler, I mean, I would totally encourage you to get a PC.
Sure.
Because you can cram a lot of power for the same money. I mean, a lot of power.
Oh, entirely. Like, I mean, it's especially like, if you're a flame artist, you obviously have no choice in the matter.
But Cinema 4D or something.
Right, exactly. They all run faster on a Windows box.
And you can buy two blazing fast cards for less money, throw them in there. When they get old, you pull them out and throw two more new ones in, you know?
Yeah. And if they get old in a year, then, you know, you're out $1,000 versus you're out $5,000. Yeah. And so that's just really weird. It's so odd because even the laptops and such, I mean, granted, laptops have always been sort of a weird situation because everything inside them is very proprietary, et cetera, et cetera. But at least you used to be able to buy RAM for your bloody machine. Oh, you know, today my needs are, I only need 4 gigabytes of RAM. Well, 6 months from now, oh, wow, as it turns out, I've got a new gig and I'm doing all this stuff. I love this machine. I don't want to drop another $3,000. I just want to put some more RAM in it. Nope, sorry, can't do that. Oh, my hard drive is small. My hard drive is great for my needs today. But in 2 years, when the rest of the machine is humming just fine, but the hard drive is full, you know, now I can't upgrade the hard drive either.
Well, not through proper channels, but
well, right. But I mean, that kind of, I mean, the RAM,
the soldered in RAM,
exactly.
I mean, it's like the new, when I got my last MacBook Air, I'm like, oh, let me check and see, you know, well, maybe I'll just get this and I'm sure I can upgrade it. And I went and looked, and I'm like, what do you mean the RAM is soldered in?
Yeah. The whole idea of that is ridiculous. I mean,
you know why they do it. I mean, I understand that, but it's basically, there should be a flashing light on the site before you order. It says, you should just go ahead and get as much RAM as you can right now.
Or just sell it in maximum RAM configurations. Because the maximum RAM you can put into those things is only, I think, 16 gigabytes. And if you're going to bother with a Retina MacBook Pro, chances are fairly good. You are, in fact, a professional, and you're going to need more than 8 gigabytes of RAM.
Yeah, and I should say I'm talking about the Mac Air. The MacBook Pro makes absolutely no freaking sense to me whatsoever.
Well, I mean, it's the very definition of Pro, right? You know, the idea is to have
MacBook Pro all soldered?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah, the Retina versions, mind you.
Oh, yeah, I guess because they wanted to make them as thin as possible.
Sure. But it's still, I mean, it's so ridiculous that here's something that is, if I could try to define pro versus not pro, being able to swap out parts that have a much shorter shelf life or have a much shorter lifespan or half-life than the machine in total, you know, you need to be able to swap that out. Yeah, that is pro. The idea that, again, you know, today I want a 230 gig hard drive because it's flash and flash is super expensive. So that's all I can afford at the moment. But in a year when 230 gigabytes is too small, do I now have to drop another $3,500 to get a half a terabyte flash drive? No, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm just still sitting here reeling with the idea that MacBook Pro is soldered memory.
Yeah,
God.
Yeah. It's not pro. It's simply not pro.
That's just not cool.
Yeah. I mean, granted, the machine's blazingly fast, you know,
yeah,
so
absolutely.
That part's pro. The idea of a super high-resolution display, super pro, right? But come on, why are you giving us all this but not giving us the other fairly crucial element? Now, you could say, well, oh, you know, there's only a small percentage of people who upgrade their RAM after the fact. Well, it's like, yeah, that's true. But you know what? Come on, throw us a bone. You know,
or at least, I mean, God, at least warn people up front. I wouldn't have realized this.
Oh, they do. They do mention that it's soldered on.
Oh, do they?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. But yeah, it's so ridiculous. Because it's like, why? I don't know. It irks me because the 2% of people who bothered to upgrade their machines to extend the life out of them were also the ones that stuck with them through the really dark times. And this is another giant middle finger to those people,
which is also me, you know,
I'm not trying to disguise where I am in that. That's that itch, that scratch that is indicative of a much larger philosophical problem that I'm having with Apple these days.
Yes, which is why we're seeing other people.
Well, yeah, we're definitely seeing other people. and again, yeah, it's not that their products are not good. It's that my needs are outstripping their abilities.
Yeah, it's not you, it's me, but it's kind of you. It's you.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think I've mentioned a couple times on the show, you know, like at work, I basically stopped using a Mac at work. And
really? I wasn't entirely, that's really interesting. So are you just running a Linux workstation? I did want to ask, what's your environment these days?
My environment at work is 3-point-something gigahertz Core i7 in a nice big box that I can open up. It's got a couple of graphic cards in it, 16 gig of RAM, running Mint Linux 16, Petra, which is 16.
I have no idea what that is. That's a distribution I've never heard of before.
Yeah, Mint. Oh, Mint's great. It's a Ubuntu / Debian derivative.
Got it.
Nice interface because Ubuntu and Debian are shooting themselves in the foot with their window managers these days. But Unity on Ubuntu is infuriating because it's so oversimplified. It makes me crazy. So the first thing you have to do is change your Unity.
Wasn't Unity supposed to be the great white hope?
Yeah, it is. It's supposed to, make it easy for everybody, but infuriating for anyone who knows what they're doing already.
Well, isn't that, and that's sort of the funny thing is that, the age of Linux on the desktop will finally come when no one cares about a bloody desktop anymore.
That's true. I've never heard anybody say that, but I believe you're absolutely right.
Yeah.
I mean, because we're reaching a point where it's doable, but people are like, oh, but I just use my tablet. What do you mean?
Yeah.
I don't have a computer.
Yeah.
It kills me. It doesn't kill me. I mean, I half expect it now when I ask somebody. I almost ask what sort of computing device you have at home instead of saying what sort of computer do you have at home.
Sure.
Because lots of times I'll hear, I don't have a computer. I just have my, I have a laptop, I guess, but I just use my iPad or my Kindle Fire or whatever.
Mm-hmm. I'm seeing a lot of folk who have tablets that are not necessarily iPads. It seems to me that the market for Android or Microsoft tablets is increasing.
Yeah, the Microsoft thing, it goes back and forth, and it really depends on which tablet you're talking about. They've done some good things, and they've taken some steps forwards, and they've taken some steps back. So I really am still not sure about what their survivability is.
Yeah,
but there are a lot of them out there. I mean,
that's true, and that's the interesting thing is I'm actually seeing people in the wild with Surfaces, and they're using Surfaces as if they were real computers.
Yeah.
Unlike the iPad, I see plenty of people with iPads, but they're all just doing consumer stuff. They are playing Sudoku, or they're watching a video, or they are reading the New York Times, and this is mostly on the train and such, or they're playing a game. And again, the iPad is great for all those things, but for people who are getting work done because they failed to get everything done at the office or failed to, do whatever they needed to do before work in the morning, those are the people who are on non-Apple hardware, and they're the ones that are getting things done. Now, you could actually make the argument that the people who have Apple devices simply were able to get all of their work done during the normal work hours and therefore did not have to work on the train like the dog ate their homework.
And then there are people who are locked into the Windows world.
Sure,
So they have to have, this and that. But
right, because they have to speak to whatever crazy, networking environment they've got at the office, etc.
Oh, yeah, right. Or like their boss just says, no, you have to use Windows. But I think they've made some really good steps with the Surface in that exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, because, you look at it as a really, really lightweight laptop. Like a good hardware, really lightweight, done. Okay, traditional laptop that happens to be touch sensitive. That's kind of how I look at it.
They've been doing tablets forever, but they've always got it wrong. They always, it's like, here's a tablet and it's running just plain old fucking Windows, Whereas the Surface at least has, if not, it's got its own problems, but, at least the ideas for getting out of the way and becoming a tablet are there. Mm-hmm. It still gets some of the right, some of the wrong. And I know some people who really, really love theirs. But then there's the whole thing with, the RT versus the actual Windows, thing that's kind of really, I won't say muddy the water, it's bloodied the water for them, because, people.
Well, because it tanked and it cost them a huge amount of cash.
Yeah, and then people are like, I bought this thing and I can't install Office on it. And they're like, yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
okay.
Well, and that's the weird thing is that Sure, the Surface RT is a different hardware architecture, but what's also intriguing is that the SDK is entirely different.
Apparently,
and again, I don't program on the Windows side, so I really don't understand the nuances, but apparently, from what I understand, there are things that you are just not allowed to do on a Windows RT system that is readily available on the traditional Intel Windows system.
Well, there, and even on that side, there are things you can't do. I don't know if you saw the recent thing with Mozilla. They had the Windows 8 Firefox for the Metro screen and had problems with it, and they just basically took it off, and they said the reason we had to do this was all about what Microsoft won't let you do.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Because I also think that the Surface interface, the Metro UI, works really well for a tablet, works really well for a phone, horrible on a desktop, totally useless on a desktop.
Yeah, that was the dumbest thing they ever... One of the dumbest things they've ever done.
But the idea of the Surface being sort of a convertible, you know, being able to have your touch-sensitive, you know, big, giant buttons with, you know, glanceable information and all that, being a consumption device... and being able to get your homework done on the train in the morning, you know, that's a really wonderful idea, especially because the real Surfaces, not the RTs, but the real ones, the actual ones that are Intel-based, you know, those are real machines. You know, you can do, you could cut on that. You know, you could actually do stuff on that.
Now imagine if you had some equivalent of that in the Apple world, you know.
Yeah.
And how cool that would probably be if it were done right. I mean, do you remember when that company was doing those conversions you could get?
I have a very good friend by the name of Joseph DeRuvo, who's a photography teacher in Norwalk, and he created his own Mac tablet. He built it himself, and he got in touch with the folk who were designing those Mac tablets, and basically they wound up using effectively his design. yeah. I should also mention...
I was wondering, because, I remember they changed some things at one point. That's interesting.
Yeah. As I mentioned, he's a photography teacher, and he teaches out of his house, and he made these fantastic individual, single-sized dock rooms for all of his students. So he's got so he's got 8 of these things, and they are single person use, so they're sort of like a photo booth, really. And they're made out of large cardboard boxes, like from refrigerators and such. And yeah, he just sort of figured out exactly how you do it, how you need to reinforce it, and and, you know, run all the power, keep it dark, etc. And it's perfect. And they're all collapsible.
That's cool.
So yeah, you can kind of, you know, they all transform down into something that's basically flat pack, and you move it to wherever, and then poof, you know, within 10 minutes, you have that thing up and rolling.
That's pretty awesome.
It's pretty amazing. And so he bodged together that, you know, he needed a tablet because he was using his Mac, but he wanted to take a look at photography and be able to use a pen, you know, like a Wacom tablet on or like a Cintiq on the laptop itself. And so he built it.
Yeah. Well, and the ones that company was doing, they were really, really nice. And the machine, it worked really, really well.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, very much so.
You know, it wasn't a touch interface, of course, but I mean, you know, it's like the desire for these sort of things has always been, and like I said, Microsoft has been making these tablets, you know, some sort of, you know, usually pen-based tablets, but some of them had multi-touch in a way or whatever, but I don't know, and everybody's just been kind of floundering. Microsoft's floundered, but they've got a lot of, I will admit, they've got a lot of good stuff. You know, they've got a lot of stuff right. I mean, I have a friend, I think Dave Nanian, I think he's still, I'm not sure. He was using, I think he was playing with one, or I don't know if he's using it all the time. But yeah, there's a lot of stuff. Like that little Lenovo Yoga.
Oh, right,
It's a neat little Android tablet. And then they've also got the Yoga 2, which is like what we're kind of talking about here, a multi-mode. It's a laptop, and it's also a tablet touch thing, you know.
Well, we're coming to an age where the PC as we know it, the personal computer as we know it, the thing on your desk, the desktop computer, that is obviously, it will still be there in some capacity. It will morph over time. But truly, the PC, the personal computer, is the thing that's in your pocket. It's your phone right now. And that will become more true over time.
Right. And even now, I mean, I do this, and I've noticed other people doing it, where you refer to your home computer.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Which is a thing that you use that for that. You know, it's your minivan. It's the equivalent, you know, we talk about trucks, but it's kind of your minivan, you know, but whatever. But most people, you know, a lot of people don't say personal computer unless they're talking about their laptop or even their tablet, you know. So, yeah, I totally agree. And this is where we've talked with John Alpert before, this is where we get left behind.
Right.
Because of that, the change.
Yeah, you know? Everyone else gets raptured. And we're the ones who get left behind.
Oh, well. Yeah, but more cake for us. Awesome house.
Totally more cake for us. So that's always good.
Armageddon cribs. I'm gonna do that.
So we talked about, you know, the weird Mac hardware and it not quite, you know, it's definitely one step forward, but it's also not. You know, net, it's one step forward. But I do think it's two steps forward, one step back in each iteration. And because they've got this life cycle where if you don't upgrade, suddenly shit stops working. Like, for example, no one told me that when I upgraded my phone to iOS 7, that suddenly my version of iTunes was going to no longer work with it and not allow me to back up my phone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. And the new version of iTunes sucks balls. So I didn't want to upgrade.
tell us how you really feel.
Exactly. I'm why bother pulling punches at this point? I should really be drinking. Or possibly not. One or the other. Things will get very dark very quickly, I think.
You don't know me, Apple. You don't know me.
You don't know me. Yeah, no, it's not pretty. And now I had a fairly major hardware problem with my phone, and of course I haven't backed up my phone in forever, and I couldn't back it up via iCloud because iCloud doesn't give you nearly as much storage space as you have on your phone, so that's useless. And quite frankly, I don't want everything stored in iCloud. You know, there are certain things I wouldn't mind stored, but there are other things that are a little bit more sensitive I don't particularly want stored there. Not to mention things like PhotoStream. No one to this day can tell me exactly how PhotoStream works and whether
I've
or not...
never turned it on.
Yeah, exactly.
Never turned it on.
Which also means that your photos aren't backed up into iCloud.
Right.
So if I wipe my phone, I lose all of my photos. That is insane.
Yeah.
You know, just because I didn't want a photo stream so that other people could see my photographs, or I would have photos that were suddenly on all my devices, I don't want all of the photos that are on my iPhone, on my iPad, or on my computer for that matter. I mean, maybe in a backup capacity, sure, but not really for anything. You know, I don't need that sort of stuff synced. And granted, I realize that I'm in the minority, but that's why I turned it off. But now I don't have the option of backing anything up. And, you know, it's just so ridiculous. I thought that, okay, well, something finally has, you know, gotten me to upgrade iTunes. And sure enough, I had to upgrade iTunes. And holy crap, what a giant mess that thing is. I don't even...
Yeah.
I mean, it's always been a bit of a playground as far as UI is concerned, but holy crap. Come on, iTunes guys and girls. You can do better than this. I know you can.
Yeah, I agree. It's not their best work.
No, it is not. It is
especially
ridiculous.
Especially with the abrupt change in UI elements. I mean, like, you know, someone at work, she downloaded iTunes and, you know, she's like, oh my God, where do I click?
Right.
And I'm like, oh, she's like, where's the radio?
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, hang on. It's going to take a while. Yeah.
Now, granted, if you go through the crazy incantations, you can get it kind of more or less back to what it was.
Right, right.
But it's a hideously ugly version of what it was.
Right, because you basically defeated everything they've done.
Right. And how many revisions is that going to be able to happen? Right.
Right.
So frustrating. And you take a look at, well, you take a look at iOS 7.1 even. I mean, so 7.1 was a fairly major security upgrade, etc., and bug fix. But then they decide to go and fuck with a bunch of the UI. And now...
Oh my God, items that were, it was like...
You know, items that were like icons and such that were, you know, very large buttons and easily tappable, which was really great so that you didn't have to be very precise, are now these sub-microscopic buttons. Like, the hang-up button is now... like 1/4 the size of what it used to be.
Oh yeah, that was kind of...
It's infuriating.
Yeah. I have to admit, and I don't know if other people feel differently, one thing, the keyboard changed, right?
Oh yeah.
It actually works better for me now, and I don't know why.
Interesting.
I was always really bad with the other keyboard. I don't know. So I assume that I'm an extreme edge case in some way.
I thought they only changed the shift key on the keyboard.
Like when you swipe to type your password in.
Uh-huh.
That keyboard is, the buttons are square now.
Really? Interesting.
Or something's different. I guess I really didn't pay attention to what exactly they were before, but...
Oh, I thought you meant the like the QWERTY keyboard.
I haven't even noticed if the QWERTY keyboard is different.
Yeah, probably the QWERTY keyboard is actually different. It's much more bold. The letters are bolder, which is intriguing to me, which is fine. It took me a little while to get used to the chunkiness. But also, I think I have that assistive, like, make everything not Helvetica Neue ultralight button turned off.
The keyboard looks, that keyboard looks pretty much the same. Yeah. Slightly different here and there.
But the weird thing is that with the keyboard, and I'm pulling it up now, what I don't get is the shift key. You have no idea what position the shift key is in now. It was always a little bit weird with the iOS 7 keyboard, and now it's unfathomable.
You mean because it's basically... It's two different versions of what we would think of as highlight.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It starts out, you know, when you begin a sentence with it with a black arrow on the white background, which is identical to all the other keys. Now, granted, all the other keys happen to be capital, but they never... And here's one thing that I guess people have retconned in their own minds. Apple never shipped a software QWERTY keyboard that had lowercase letters.
I didn't think so.
some people actually think that happened. Like, when you hit the shift key, it all changed. No, that never happened.
I was probably one of those people.
And
people from, and I've heard people complain about that. I mean, this doesn't make any sense. How hard is it to just make the letters change? But
right. Yeah. But at the same time, though, so here we are. We've got the shift key with the black arrow and the white background. And that is the shift is enabled with the white keys with the black letters. So, okay, that's fine. But the letters don't shift. So they're not necessarily matching.
Yeah, and also, if you'll notice the backspace key.
Right.
It looks like the shifted.
Yes. the non-shifted. Yeah. It's the
right,
gray background.
Sorry,
right.
Non-shifted.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, you're right. You know, right. All right, I've got it. See, I've got it backwards.
Yeah, but then you've got yet another one, which is a gray background on black. And that's not the shift key, that's the return key and the keyboard key and the number pad, right, which is totally ridiculous. There's no rhyme or reason. And of course, the word space is in all lowercase, which is somewhat hilarious.
Yeah, right. Space and return are all in lowercase, so they're only in lowercase here.
Yeah.
And the Siri button is white. But the international symbol and the what do you call that? The
number series.
Yeah.
Yeah, the 1, 2, 3 is, yeah. It's just so weird because you figure, like, at minimum, space would, actually, that even could be like a fun, interesting differentiator where if you decided for some reason that you didn't want to change caps on the keyboard, change caps on space. On the word space, you know, or change it on the word return.
And that key also changes colors when you press it.
Right.
For some reason.
Yeah. At least give me an initial cap on space and return. Come on. Give me that at least. You know, it just looks unfinished.
Yeah, the caps thing really has confused me a couple times. Yeah.
I was never confused with the caps key prior, and now I'm constantly confused with it.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where once you notice it, you start to become confused by it. I guess if you don't even pay attention, you may not, but because, you start in mode A.
Right, yeah. And that's the thing, too. It's like it always gives you that initial caps, which is convenient, certainly, because in general you want to start a sentence with a capital letter. But it just looks like the default state because it looks like every other key, but it's not.
Yeah. And like I said, once you've seen it, it's like a stuck pixel or macro box.
Right. Like you can't unsee it.
You'll never not, or in this case, not be unconfused.
Yeah. It's very, very disconcerting and very weird, and I don't like it. But it also, again, it's
rabble, rabble, rabble.
Indeed. It's just yet another thing where they used to be so good at not releasing things until they were super refined and super on point. You know, you may have disagreed with something, but it was definitely like well thought out. And now I don't think it's up to the same standards. And I'm not to say that, like, oh, this wouldn't have happened if Steve Jobs were still here.
Right.
I think that's a bunch of bullshit, too. I just think that they are now a radically larger company trying to do a fuck ton more things. And they are still thinking that they're a tiny, struggling company doing a couple of things per year.
Right. That they still need to put on a show to save the orphanage. And it's like, nope, you guys fucking own the orphanage.
Yeah, not only do you own the orphanage, but you own the state. So, right? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and we're pressed for time tonight, so I don't want to get really good on this rat hole, but, I mean, then there's the new iWork, where...
Oh, that's just
the
appalling.
Hit has been thrown out the window.
Utterly appalling. I mean, they still don't have half the functionality of the prior versions. Granted, they did make an update. Thank the gods for that, because before they completely stripped out all AppleScript, and with the update they instituted some AppleScript, and they didn't just do the generic dictionary. Thank the gods for that, but they really did update it. Granted, they could have gone so much further, but they didn't. But I also believe that AppleScript isn't long for this world. It's very clear that they're not really updating it in any true capacity. You know, they're not modernizing the language at all. They're not trying to do more interesting things, like the way they're doing with Objective-C and all of that. Mm. I think the idea of this sort of verb, natural language type of scripting certainly has its place. I mean, the idea was that it was accessible to more people. And I think it is. I think it's actually accessible more to non-programmers than to programmers. I think every programmer that I know that has tried to write AppleScript is confounded by it.
Yeah, it's a little confusing.
Yeah. And it is, if you are a programmer.
And again, and like you say, I'm not saying that in a bad way. It's just, when you... Yeah, depending on which side you come at it from.
Right. And if you come at it from I know what a window is and I can describe this in a sentence.
Right. Tell Safari to...
Right.
Hey, that makes perfect sense.
You kind of get it. And you can do the simple things that, a person who's not a programmer would want to do. The problem is that programmers want to do, vastly more complicated things, and they know how. So giving them an interface that allows them to do that would be really, really lovely. And I don't think they have any interest in doing that. Because also, the other thing is that if you have all these sandbox restrictions, et cetera, how do you do inter-app communication well? Aside from, these crazy middleman type situations where, the one sandbox app talks to the OS and the OS says to the OS, oh, I need an open dialog box. And the OS says, okay, I will grant you an open dialog box. And the OS presents that dialog box to the application. It's entirely opaque.
But the whole iWork thing is just kind of indicative of something, which really, if you want to go back and say it started with Final Cut Pro.
Sure.
That sort of, they stripped out all this stuff and we're going to reinvent this. And we took a lot of stuff you want, but we're going to reinvent this. So hang in there.
Yeah.
Well, like, well, what about today? You know.
Right. So, exactly.
I don't know.
And to their credit, Final Cut Pro X of today is a much, much more capable app than it was when it launched. It still doesn't do everything that, you know, a lot of people expect from it, but it is, again, it is far more capable. And I really do think that there are a bunch of students out there today that are cutting their teeth on Final Cut Pro X.
Oh, yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, I turned over the video production at work to our, ostensibly, our webmaster. Mm-hmm. And she, you know, I, from the get-go, I stripped out all my stuff, you know, rebuilt machine from start and said, okay, I'm going to start you on Final Cut Pro because I knew she would grok it, right, kind of out of the box. She doesn't need to do anything really complex. She's not coming from a position where, you know, she goes, where's the bin? Because she doesn't know what a bin is. So, nice. You know, she trained up on that. So, and it works just fine for her. She plows right through these things just fine.
Sure. And I'm sure she's also the only one working on a particular project. She doesn't have a giant pipeline or anything.
Right.
Exactly. Yes.
She is the pipeline.
Right.
So, you know. So basically, I figured out her workflow and pipeline beforehand, mm-hmm. set it all up, and then I just trained her how to use Final Cut Pro, and here you go.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and that's fine.
But again, they did, you know, abandon a whole bunch of people who needed stuff to work now.
Right. They put us on that island. There's this smoke monster that nobody explained. And and then we had to wait, you know, 5 seasons to figure out what the hell we were doing there.
Crazy. So sad.
I definitely am starting to see other people, like I say, at work. I'm basically, you know, everything's done in VMs. So there's one Mac that I connect to do stuff that I have to do on there. But, and at home, I've, you know, I do, you know, I have my MacBook Air, and then I have another Apple laptop that is connected to my tablet for, you know, for doing artwork and stuff and for doing this basically. But, you know, on the behind me, there's my crazy ass Linux box. And recently all right, here comes the big admission. Recently,
yes.
So my Mac Pro that I don't turn on anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I decided I'd been playing a lot of games lately, and I'm like, well, I'm just going to build a Windows box.
That's exactly what I'm doing.
Yeah. I mean, I just gave in because I'm like, all right, I like my consoles and like this and that. But at first it was like, oh, I'm going to build a Steam box. And then I'm like, no, you're not. You're going to build a Windows box so you can play all the games you want.
Sure, which in effect is a Steam box.
Yeah, a Windows Steam box. Sure. Exactly, yeah.
It's a more capable Steam box.
As you may have noticed, I've been playing a lot of Borderlands 2 lately.
Oh, my. I've actually been playing a lot of Diablo 3 because the expansion's coming out. Yeah, the expansion's coming out this week.
I heard that. I was just kind of like, wow, that's still a thing?
Yeah, no, it's still a thing. I mean, I put it to bed a long time ago because it just became one of those situations where they added an auction house, much like World of Warcraft.
Which everyone's doing with Diablo on their own since day one.
Right, right.
I wrote a Diablo trading post.
Oh, right on. That's pretty cool.
When we were living in Australia. That's how long ago.
Wow. But yeah, I mean, the idea of it was great. The downside, though, is that unlike World of Warcraft, the economy is such that things can only inflate. There's no natural ebb and flow.
So it's Wall Street.
Yeah, pretty much. The downside, though, is that like everyone needs to be at the auction house because drops are entirely random. And the way they had it was there was no biasing. So if you were running a particular character, the drops did not have a bias towards stats for your character. So more often than not, you picked up useless items. Yeah. And if you wanted to continue to play the game, eventually you got to the point where you had to start buying things at the auction house. And stuff just got inflated, inflated, inflated. And then they introduced the real money auction house, i.e. you could pay actual cash for things, which was kind of insane. But hey, it's convenient for people, you know, pay to win, as it were. But that just meant that the gold auction house became insane because it was all the same stuff. It just had an equivalent dollar amount. Totally, totally ridiculous. Anyway, we should probably wrap up. So, do you have any fun things to share with the audience?
I do.
Excellent.
Wonder how that happened. Funny thing is, you made a Monty Python joke as we started talking earlier. I don't know if it'll make it in the show, but my pick is actually two things, but they're related. I found this video of John Cleese from 1991 talking about creativity.
Oh.
And it's very interesting. It's very, some of it's sort of academic. Some of it's just his personal things he's noticed over the time because, you know, let's not forget, John Cleese is a very educated man.
Very much so.
In fact, most of the Pythons were.
Well, they were all public school boys. That's how they met.
Right. And then they all went to, you know, university and nice universities.
Yes.
except for a couple.
Except the American.
Put a link in the show notes. But I can, if anyone's interested in it, it's at Vimeo/589-18963. It's really interesting. It's kind of old. Some of it's not, you know, really revelatory, but it's really interesting. And it's kind of that stuff that you don't really think about. And it's really interesting to hear it coming from him. So the second thing related to that is, if you're a Python fan, there's a movie called Holy Flying Circus that came out about 3 years ago. It is a Monty Python movie that has no pythons in it.
What?
It's a movie about the making of, and particularly the circumstances around Life of Brian.
Interesting.
Because, you know, there was a lot of
it's around pythons.
Yes. And it's other people portray all the pythons, and I'll get to that in a second. You know, but it's about, you know, some of the controversy, and they ended up you know, on television debating religious people about this, and but it's really fun. I mean, it's not great.
So this is a dramatization. This is not nonfiction.
It's a dramatization.
It's the equivalent of Pirates of Silicon Valley.
Yes,
got it.
But it's done by a bunch of fairly well-known British actors and comedians, all of whom are very funny, including Darren Boyd, who does the most amazing John Cleese you will ever see in your life.
Is he also tall?
Yeah, you totally are like, that's like some bizarro world John Cleese. It's really him.
Nice.
They're all very good. Steve Punt plays Eric Idle, and his Eric Idle is kind of sublime as well. People, if you know Rufus Jones, he plays Terry Jones, no relation, but he's very good at that. And Stephen Fry plays God.
Of course he does.
It's a lot of fun if you don't go in with you can't go in with an attitude about how much they, you know, that these are not the pythons. But if you go in to watch the performance and the story, it is really, really incredibly interesting and funny. It's very funny.
Cool. Well, I'll definitely check that out. Certainly sounds like a nice way to lose an evening.
Yeah. Right, it's various places. I can't remember where it's playing, but yeah, there's even a Blu-ray out of it now. So
sweet.
Oh, yeah.
Sweet.
So what about you? What you got?
Well, I've got a piece of hardware. As I've mentioned, I am building a PC, and I'm doing it one circuit board at a time.
No, the Johnny Cash of PCs.
Exactly. No, I'm not actually doing that. But there are certain things that are very important to me, certain components and such. And part of the fun of building a PC is specking out all the components. What are you going to buy? Are you going to do this versus that, etc.? You know, how is that going to work? Well, one of the things that I always forget about, and which is sort of funny because I actually have some of these, not this particular one that I'm about to describe, but keyboards are very important.
True.
And most keyboards that you get with computers kind of suck. The chiclet keyboard that comes with most modern Macs, so many people really like it. I think it's horrifically awful.
I love it.
It is, it's spongy, it's not the right, there's not the right travel distance, everything is just weird. You know, you've got those non-full keys and it's so bad. And God forbid you've got the wireless version. Ugh.
Well, all right, yeah, I will agree with you there.
Yeah, no, not a good scene. But I used to own the, I still technically own, two versions of the original, well, not the original, but the Apple Extended Keyboard 2, which is one of the finest keyboards on the planet.
Absolutely agree.
Because it's a mechanical keyboard. It costs something like $159 retail when they came out. I mean, back then, in the mid-80s, there was a huge amount of money. Why on earth would you pay that much money just to get a keyboard? Which, of course, right. also was back in the day when you bought a Macintosh and it didn't come with a keyboard. You had to buy them separately.
Which is why everyone had different keyboards.
Exactly. Yeah. So I was recently re-hipped to this, the Code keyboard. And oh, yeah. yeah, and it's codekeyboards.com, and they make amazingly beautiful mechanical keyboards, some of which you can get with LED backlights. So if you have a dark environment, say you are, you know, doing color grading and you want to control your light environment, but you still want to see your keyboard, you can do that. All the keycaps are replaceable, and they're good solid ABS plastic keycaps. They also, you know, they're meant to be removable. And it's just really this really amazing keyboard. They've got a couple of different variants. They've got the green keyboard, which is an 87 key variant. They've got another 109 key variant. Yeah, and as I said, the keycaps are all replaceable. So if you have a particular, you know, if you want like Dvorak versus QWERTY.
Right, it has the dip switches on it,
exactly,
right?
Yeah, you could do that as well. So or you can, you know, replace the keycaps. So that's
or
super groovy.
Or swap the alt and command.
Exactly. And so one of the nice things also, it comes with all the parts to allow you to do that. So, for example, you know, if you've ever tried to remove keycaps on a keyboard, sometimes they can be really difficult. Sometimes you break them.
Yep.
That's clearly, obviously, a bad thing. The Code keyboard comes with a keycap remover tool, which is really quite simple. You know, you just like slip it on and it pinches the thing that it needs to pinch, and then the keycap just lifts up. It's really, really cake. So you can vacuum all those beard hairs that accumulate over time. I am currently in front. This is ironic because I don't use a proper mechanical keyboard, even though I do prefer them. The one I have in front of me is an old white keyboard that came with the Angel Poir lamp iMac. the one that wasn't entirely sealed, so theoretically you could get at all the dirt and grime, but it is clear, so you can see how disgusting the under keys really are.
Yep.
And damn, it is disgusting.
Yeah.
So clean your keyboards, folks. That's always a good idea. So yeah, you can clean or you can mod the keyboards. They're really beautiful. They're matte black. So they're definitely kind of interesting to check out. I just like it because the LED backlight is a really nice LED backlight.
Very cool.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to say you had an IBM Model M.
No, I don't have a Model M. I actually don't own... I used to own a Model M.
I have two of them. I don't use them, but...
Well, they're basically museum items now.
Well, I mean, I honestly, my friend Paul, he swears by and won't use any of this, but my God, they're so loud.
Oh, yeah, they are. They really are loud. Yeah, and I am super loud with my membrane keyboard.
Yeah. I can't imagine you with a Model M.
A mechanical keyboard, it's deafening. Yeah, you're going to need earplugs. Yeah. Which is also one of the reasons why I don't use a mechanical keyboard on a daily basis, because they are loud as hell. But right. If you type a lot, totally worth it. The key travel, the feel, everything is radically superior on a proper mechanical keyboard.
Cool.
Yeah.
Very cool.
So that's about it. So where can we find you?
You can find me in the usual places. You can find me on Twitter at TANKGRRL. Or you can find me, pretty much everything about me at about.me/MaggieMcPhee. And where can we find you?
You can find me on Twitter. I'm at Octothorpe, OCTOTHORPE. And you can also find me at about bit.ly/octothought.
I guess I also forgot. Soon you will be able to find me on Captain Ahab's Motorcycle Club.com.
Yes.
As I have become the webmaster and online curator for one of my favorite filmmakers of all time, Corey McAbee. And I'm so super excited about this. And the fact that Corey calls me on the phone and I get to talk to him and I have to tamp down my fangirling.
Cool.
I've been a huge fan of him since the first time I saw The American Astronaut, and it's a lot of fun. I mean, I still have my day job. Don't get me wrong. I had to clarify that with some people. You know, it's not like a new job, but I'm doing
this is an additional job. Yes.
Yeah, and it's so far so much fun, and we get some really cool stuff coming soon.
Nice.
So. Nice. Yay for me!
Congrats. No, that's really, really fun. Very, very cool. Yeah.
Yay. It's so weird, you know. I think I tweeted the thing about sometimes you shouldn't meet your heroes, but in this case, it didn't turn out that he's just as nice and sweet as I thought he would be.
Right. Cool. Well, we should call it a night.
Let's do that.
Have you been watching Cosmos?
Yes.
I really enjoy it. Do you?
Yeah, I haven't watched the one tonight yet, but I did enjoy the second one, and I enjoyed the first one enough because I know they had to kind of get everybody on board. So
right. Yeah, they kind of rushed the first one, I think. Not rushed as in like the effects and such weren't up to par. Although I do find it interesting that they are doing a lot of different types of animation and effects. Mm-hmm. But I actually like it.
I like the animation, the cell animation,
the cell-based animation, because it's all 3D anyway. But.
Right.
But it looks like it's 2D, and that's what makes it cool. I really do like that, that sort of primitive-looking, because it's all hyper-angular and very sharp, bold lines. It's very Genndy Tartakovsky.
Yeah.
A bit,
Genndy Tartakovsky meets Bluth, maybe.
Sure, yeah, no, I definitely see that, yep.
Like, the lines are very Genndy Tartakovsky, and then the colors are really Bluthy.
Yeah, those jewel tones are very, very Don Bluth, very much so. I'm thinking Wizards, oh, that's Bakshi, I'm sorry. Don Bluth is American Tail. Right, still. Yeah, definitely.
Very backlit looking, illuminated.
Mm-hmm. Very stained glass. Again, those jewel tones, those blues, and those, and especially in Cosmos, the reds and the umbers and the oranges and such.
Yeah.
It's really cool.
And that one section that everyone's taking them task for getting the history wrong.
Oh, which one is this? I don't recall it. What?
It's the one about the monk. What's his name?
In the first episode.
Yes.
Yes, yes. And yes, I've totally forgotten his name as well. Because I'm a bad scientist.
Yeah, it's a friend, some Franciscan monk. Apparently, it's a little not quite right.
Oh.
Bruno, Giordano Bruno.
Bruno, right. Yeah. How could we have forgotten Bruno?
Well, apparently they forgot someone else before him. So.
I thought they mentioned someone prior to Bruno. But it was more, it was like a sentence, and easily disregarded. So,
I don't remember.
I don't know. I'm taking a pass.
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
It's real. And boy, that first episode was just laying the smack down with science, man.
Oh, it gets so much better in the subsequent episode.
Really? I mean, I was just sitting there going, oh my God, this is on Fox.
Oh,
home
yeah.
of the ecclesiastical.
Well, that's precisely it. And I think that's why it's so wonderful, because here's the market that desperately needs this shit that, bam, they're being fed it. Oh, so good.
And then when he goes, evolution is a scientific fact.
Fact.
And you're like, wham!
Bitches.
Pow! Mic drop.
Oh, yeah. No, Neil deGrasse Tyson does not suffer fools at all. Uh-uh. And there are so many not so subtle digs at the morons who believe that the Earth is 5,000 years old and that we are the center of the universe, etc., etc.
Right.
It is wonderful to see the right wing flip their shit. Actually, you know what? No, to backing up a bit, that's wrong. It's not the right wing that's flipping their shit. But
it is the very religious conservative.
Exactly. Who happen to also be right wing, but not all right wingers are complete morons.
Right.
I may, you know, not agree with them as far as, you know, philosophy is concerned, but most of them don't believe that the Earth is only 5,000 years old.
Right. You know, and that's
good for them. No one's really doing truly investigative, long-form, vetted reporting anymore because it's all about making sure you get to broadcast first.
Yeah.
I mean, look at what CNN's been doing over the last several days with the flight disappearance. I mean, they've basically got 24-hour coverage on
nothing.
I mean, can we revoke their license?
They are covering the hell out of that nothing.
Holy fuck. This is like worse and more embarrassing than the freaking vaults of, oh Christ, what's his face? Al Capone. This is fucking worse than Al Capone's vaults. There's nothing there, and yet they're trying to make it into some sort of dramatic thing. And sure enough, there's an audience who's eating this up like candy, and it's depressing as hell.
Sure, yeah. Oh, no, I agree. There's no... Well, I mean, there are people out there doing real reporting now, but they are not CNN and MSNBC and Fox, and, you know, that's not who's doing it.
Anyone who's doing network broadcasting. Although, that said... You know, all of the above, you know, Fox, CNN, etc., they do have a long-form segment now and again.
Right,
but the vast majority of their programming is the equivalent of Honey Boo Boo.
Right. And this is why so many people were so interested in Al Jazeera.
Right.
Because, you know, they were doing actual, you know...
They were doing old-school, you know, CBS from the 1950s style journalism.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and, you know, CNN used to do that, but they haven't done that in ages. I mean, like...
Probably in a decade.
Yeah, like when Bernard Shaw was there and stuff like, you know, that era. I mean,
sure,
there was a lot of reporting going on, but, yeah.
Yeah.
Not anymore.
Not so much. And God forbid you want news in the morning.
Yeah.
I've ceased to be able to even.
Yeah. It's all about some... cute kittens with your cup of joe.
Don't get me wrong. I need more adorable kittens in my life. But holy crap,
the internet's full of them already.
Exactly. But can I get my kittens not as hosts? Thank you very much. It's all very, very unfortunate. We should probably start the show. That was another episode of Ruining It for Everyone with your hosts Maggie McPhee and Christopher Harrington. Music provided by Kevin MacLeod. You can find us at ruiningitforeveryone.tv or search for Ruining It For Everyone on iTunes. Be sure to subscribe and rate the show as it really helps us out.